She's got talent, there's no doubt about that. And you look at the latest performance, I don't know if you've seen it on Letterman, and it's impressive, and there's no sign of a one-hit wonder. But how influential is Lorde? As we know, Lorde and Lydia Ko are being hailed as two of the most influential teenagers in the world by Time magazine. Does being young and talented constitute influence?
Can we define our terms for a second here? What exactly do we mean by influential?
Well, you'd have to ask the editor of Time magazine, and because I read the article and I wasn't sure myself.
Right. I mean, I think basically, I mean, being cynical about this, it boils down to who's famous, who are we talking about most, who gets most column inches, and whose photo on the front cover of Time magazine will get most copies flying off the shelf.
Okay. Mm. All right.
It's influential, influential as per celebrity rather than influential as per power, I think.
Yeah. I mean, all Time seems to be doing, if you read the piece, is describing early, spectacular early success, as with Lydia Ko.
Yeah. I mean, I think of influence. I'm thinking of people like, for example, Barack Obama, who does have the power to influence people's lives in a quite substantial way. I don't really know that the likes of Miss Yelich O'Connor can influence the world's economy in quite the same substantial way.
Okay. So they might like to rename the award. Is it journalists consulting their keyboards, you think, and kind of coming up with categories to sell magazines?
Licking of fingers and holding them in the wind, possibly, yes.
All right. In terms
it's
of
an influ- easy story.
In terms of influence, do you think Time has much anymore? Do you read Time?
I haven't for a while, no.
Okay.
Only at the dentist's.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, when copies are furnished, I will read it. Yes. Otherwise, no, I don't find it compelling reading.
It's quite interesting, actually, reading it 2 years out of date.
All right, what is something you find compelling? Steve McCabe, your turn first.
Well, I find myself in an interesting position because in the past I've come in here and talked about how your film reviewer, Sarah McMullen, tends to get things wrong. And I'm delighted to be able to report that she's got one right this time. I'm sure she feels validated at last. Yeah, finally I got one right. Now, I went to see Gravity on Tuesday night. I absolutely couldn't agree more. I deliberately avoided reading anything about this thing other than you have to see it. It's brilliant. And so I went to see it completely unspoiled. And I'm going to do my very, very best to avoid spoiling for anybody who hasn't had the privilege of seeing it yet. If you haven't, run. Don't walk to your nearest cinema and see it this afternoon or this evening. It is absolutely brilliant. I really, really enjoyed it. And I was blown away by the simplicity of the story. There are basically two actors in the entire film. It's amazing. And Sandra Bullock in particular, I mean, she carries the entire film on her shoulders and she's astonishingly brilliant. And I had seen headlines of a fellow named Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's basically America's equivalent of Brian Cox. Saying,
he's great.
He is very, very good. I listened to his podcast, Star Talk Radio. He's very, very good. And he was saying, yeah, there are issues with the physics of it. And he's absolutely right.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
Yes, there are. But the thing is, it's so good that you sit there going, yeah, that's wrong. But you know what? I really, really don't care.
No, who cares about Sandra's hair?
Yeah.
Well, they have had a whole bunch of astronauts who've actually sort of commented on it. People who've gone up in the space station and saying, yes, there are those issues, and I have them as well. But nonetheless, the feel that they get across is just phenomenal. And I'd say if you've got to go and see it in 3D, because that was just astonishing.
Unfortunately, I saw it in 2D, and I kind of regret it. I'm probably going to take my wife and daughter to see it in 3D. I listened to a podcast from the UK, Mark Kermode's Film Reviews. The guy is absolutely astonishing. And I listened to him every week. Hello to Jason Isaacs, by the way. And he's superb. He is the most amazing film reviewer I've ever listened to. And he has for years railed against 3D. He says, it's a bad idea, you shouldn't do it, it doesn't work, it lends nothing to a film. Finally, for the very first time, he has gone on record saying this is a film that you must see if you can in 3D. I'd like to see it in IMAX 3D. I'm not sure if that's available in New Zealand. I can imagine that would probably make my head explode. It is.
Tom Hanks is good in it, isn't he? When he goes up to rescue them in the catapult.
Oh, right. Oh, Jim, spoilers, please, please.
Sorry. thank you, Steve McCabe. Vicky Hyde.
Hello there.
Hello. What would you like to mention?
Oh, I guess I'm quite pleased to see that they've announced that there is going to be an inquiry into the rather interesting surveying techniques of the Earthquake Commission with regards to their satisfaction ratings
they were patting themselves on the back about having 80% of owners who had repairs in 2013 were satisfied with the results, and of course it didn't come out until a couple of days later that they excluded 31,000 claims where people were in dispute with EQC. So it's surveying, Jim, but not as we know it. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out and whether Jerry Brownlee will actually sort of say, actually, EQC has got it wrong here.
What was the rationale? We'll leave out any that are pending.
Anywhere they have a dispute with EQC, that was apparently was an automatic do not survey flag in their claim management system, and I gather it's sort of been just sort of waved away as, oh, well, this is just a sort of a leftover, it's not really important. But frankly, to leave out anybody who's actually objected or made a complaint doesn't really make your claims to have an 80% satisfaction rating particularly credible.
31,000 is a lot of people to leave out.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, we're seeing more and more of this incredulity about things. I mean, we've even got a chap from overseas here saying, why on earth aren't we paying out money? He's a guy from General Reinsurance. He's got $200 million to give people here, items that aren't actually under dispute, not items that they're refusing to pay. They're quite happy to pay it out, but they've only paid out a quarter of their liabilities because EQC and the insurance industry can't get their act together.
Inexplicable delays, you're saying.
Well, it's...
I mean, we've talked about it many a time, but you don't know what else to say, really.
Yeah, I don't think it's inexplicable. I think it's sort of fairly obvious in terms of poor management, lack of planning, lack of strategic thought, lack of the ability to scale up, which God knows we'd need in this country any time we get a decent earthquake. And it's just shocking to see how this sort of thing has gone on and on and on and on. I mean, we've got to the point now where Sutton is finally saying, we need to pick up the pace, guys, but we should have picked up the pace long before now. I mean, IAG last year said they'd be doing 45 rebuilds a day when in full swing, which would have been 4,000 rebuilds by IAG companies in the last quarter. Jerry Brownlee thought they were doing really well because they'd done 300 houses. The entire insurance industry had done 300 rebuilds in the last quarter.
Yeah, there's a big difference in those two figures.
Well, yes, and there's a lot of massaging of the data going on in terms of, well, you know, let's show off all the stuff that we've done and we'll include everybody's, you know, crack in the pavement that we've repaired and we can claim thousands and thousands and thousands of repairs and happy people. And it's just not a goer.
You know, even leaving out those 31,000 claims, are you surprised when you talk, as you have done a lot, and we've chatted many times to Ali Jones about this topic too, but when you talk to people about their EQC experience anecdotally, are you surprised with an 80% success rate?
I am surprised. I mean, admittedly, because I've been involved with the Insurance Watch group that sprang up to try and keep an eye on what was happening in the insurance side of things, we did tend to hear about some of the worst things that were happening. But you've got to say that there is a great deal of dissatisfaction out there, and people 3 years on are really, really starting to feel quite angry, annoyed, and sadly in some cases resigned with the whole deny, delay, defer, wait for somebody to die approach that seems to have been the main approach. Yes, we have seen some repairs done, but certainly not adequately. And it doesn't seem to be getting particularly better. And it doesn't help, of course, when we have these kinds of comments come out. I mean, you have to be really careful about survey data.
All right. Thank you, Vicky. Vicky Hyde, Steve McCabe, 16 to 5. A retired policeman and a chartered accountant are reported to be among 55 New Zealanders fleeced of $1.7 million by a Malaysia-based scam. So they think they've won a scratchy prize, essentially. They're told they must pay money to release that prize, including local taxes and legal insurance and court fees to prove the money's not from illicit offending. Blah, blah. They spun this line. And perfectly intelligent New Zealanders part out with their money. One, a woman who's lost $18,000 and is a holder of multiple university degrees. Are you amazed by this?
You don't have to be foolish to be fooled. I mean, there's always these things come out and people say, well, you know, they should have known better. They were a doctor. But frankly, anybody can be fooled if they're sufficiently desperate or keen or eager or just don't engage the critical thinking faculties at a time when they should. I mean, most of us have heard of the Nigerian scam, so I guess that would raise instant antennas. But why this one got through, obviously there are people who are vulnerable out there and they could be vulnerable regardless of education.
All right, but why? I noticed the senior sergeant dealing with this case says it's beyond belief, and you'd think beyond belief is right. If you purportedly win something overseas and then they say, oh, by the way, you've got to start sending us some money first, wouldn't the biggest alarm bells in the world be ringing?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I've seen stories along these lines in the press over the last year or so. And a lot of the time, it's people who are sent these scratches in the post. They're unsolicited. And they scratch them off. Oh, wow. In this unsolicited mail shot, gosh, who'd have thought it? I just won X, whatever it might be, a sum of money or a free cruise, I think is another one I saw somewhere. And that right there should raise warning bells immediately. Somebody has suddenly told you out of the blue, you've won a contest that you didn't even remember entering.
Yeah. Yep.
Look, but they do those sorts of things to give it actually a little bit more validity, particularly ones where something arrives in the post, because people are used to having, you know, those Reader's Digest scratchies, which,
yeah,
you know, somebody in Canada always seems to win.
But it should be on that level. People should realise that it's the same kind of thing. You may be a winner, yeah, and you quite likely won't be.
Look, obviously they're very good, and we're not meaning to sneer at the people, to add insult to injury, the people who've lost the money. But if you had won, but, you know, you needed to pay local taxes or whatever to free the money up, why wouldn't they simply offer to subtract those charges from what they were about to pay you? You'd think it would all be a lot easier doing that.
Well, the critical thinking faculties don't get engaged to that level. That's the sad thing about it. And that can happen to anybody if they get caught, you know, just at the wrong time or something seems particularly good.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Well, I do have a confession to make here. I'll just tell you, and you, Jim and Vicky, don't tell anybody else this, no, please. Don't repeat this story to anybody. But several years ago, I was looking to buy a new laptop computer off eBay. And I bought one, and the guy emailed me and said, I can sell you three more at this crazy, ridiculous, low knockdown price. And I should have realised right there and then it was the most ridiculous scam. These wasn't like, I can't remember now, sending me $2,000 laptops and he wanted, say, $600 for them. And score, I'll buy a few.
Oh, have you got his address still?
I've lost it now. See, it's a while back. He's probably moved on. And it was ridiculous. I should have realised the moment I saw it that this was obviously a scam. And I actually tried sending money through, I think it's through PayPal, and PayPal was saying, no, there are red flags around this, that we're not going to process the payment. And I should have said right there and then, oh, well, obviously there's a problem. So I then tried going to Western Union, trying to do a money transfer, and they wouldn't accept it. And finally, I realised, you know what, the universe is sending me a message here. Unfortunately, I didn't go through with it. But because it was such a phenomenal deal, I desperately wanted it to be true. And I was this close, fingers held it about, what, millimetre apart here. I was close to sending thousands of dollars for probably what would have been, I mean, I would never have seen the money again, obviously, and never have heard from the guy again. But once you get invested in the idea, then you want it and you choose to believe, contrary to all common sense and evidence.
Okay, so you create a bubble, a little bubble of denial around yourself.
Absolutely. Okay. Impenetrable, yep, bubble.
And also it becomes harder the more you invest money in to actually back out and say, actually, I've been taken. And it becomes very hard to admit to people what's happened. So this woman, for example, who stood up in this case is really, really great. And we get that whether it's psychic, you know, phone industries or alternative health products or whatever. People very rarely feel confident enough to actually back out or complain or suddenly say, hey, that's not actually right. It's the psychology that you're drawn into it. And these people take advantage of that.
Yeah, okay, thank you. That's good analysis. And a nice admission from you too, Steve McCabe.
Yeah, no one's to repeat that story. That's between you, the three of us.
No, that's right. That'd be too embarrassing if you told anybody.
Oh, it'd be shocking, wouldn't it?
And Vicky Hyde on the panel, and Professor Mark Hanahan shortly. Police are asking for help to find two youths seen throwing rocks off a motorway overbridge at cars passing below. This has happened, as we know, before in Auckland. And the pair described as school-aged, so you can probably infer that they're secondary school aged, were seen on a bridge over the southern motorway near Manukau. One of the rocks narrowly missed a windscreen but hit the underside of the car. The driver called police. By the time officers got to the bridge, the teenagers were gone. Now, the police say young people might not be aware of the seriousness of this. We would like to convey to them that throwing anything into the path of a moving vehicle could result in a car crash, which can cause serious injury. Well, I mean, some honestly will consider this a weak response and think they know what they're doing. Before we hear from Professor Mark Hennan, what do you think?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I do spend a lot of time around kids with this level of, not so much lack of intellect, but lack of curiosity and willingness to confront the fact that their actions have consequences. You know, I mean, I'm a high school teacher, so inevitably I deal with kids like this on an ongoing basis. You know, these are kids who, for whatever reason, and let's be absolutely blunt here, we're going to blame the parents. When children, you know, teenage children acting like this are obviously not getting guidance from parents. That's got to be the bottom line here. They are, yeah, if they actually bothered to engage their little brains and think about what they're doing, yes, they're absolutely aware that if you drop a heavy object on somebody or their car, you are likely to cause serious damage and quite possibly death. They are simply not bothering to think things through. Why not? What's going on? Why are these kids so utterly divorced from reality that they don't bother to think about what could happen to other people as a consequence of their actions?
Okay, and Mark will talk about the capacity to think things through. Vicky, what's your opinion?
Well, I think that starts from a very, very early age on, both the thinking things through and the ability to have sufficient empathy to understand that what you're doing has consequences and that what happens to other people is something that you should really bear in mind. I can recall years ago when there was one particularly nasty attack on a dairy owner in Auckland, with a couple of teenagers, one wielded a baseball bat and killed the chap. And his defense, I guess, for want of a better term, he sort of said, well, I didn't think that would happen. I mean, you watch it on TV all the time. They get down, you know, they go down, they get up again. he was utterly astonished that the human cranium couldn't stand up to a whack from an aluminium bat.
Yeah.
And so I guess part of its experience, part of its education, part of its very early on learning and how we deal with other people and society in general. I wish there were, you know, maybe we need more rivers. They could play poo sticks. It's a lot safer throwing a stick into a water and a lot more fun.
Yeah, and a lot more fun. Mm. The presumption of dolly incapax, incapability of wrongness, I think that is a phrase that Professor Mark Hanahan may have introduced us to during a previous chat. He's coming on now. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Well, the police charged a 15-year-old. He was 14 at the time of offending with murder, I think, the last time this happened.
Mm. Yeah. No, the way the law works, if you're under 10, even if you know all the consequences of what you're doing and you're intended to do it, you can't commit an offence. But if you're under 14, so over 10, 11, 12 or 13, all you have to know is that the act or omission was wrong. And you don't have to know the consequences. The law doesn't require that. A lot of people don't. you have to know that it's wrong. And I would think 13, 14-year-olds would know that this act is wrong, to throw an object. Whether they knew it was going to do harm or not, that's a different thing. You have to know it's wrong.
Yeah.
And it is wrong. I mean, I don't think anybody would... it would be pretty difficult for a 11, 12 or 13-year-old to say, I didn't realise it was wrong to throw a rock at an object going past. I think even much younger children would know it was wrong. They might know the consequences. And the consequences are quite serious, Jim. Under our murder provisions, and this young previous young fellow was charged with murder, the 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And all it requires is for an offender, for any unlawful object, and the unlawful object here is obviously trying to do some damage to a car, does an act that he knows to be likely to cause death. You only have to know that it's likely to cause death. Now, that may be a bit more tricky to show, and that's probably why that they didn't get the murder charge through. They may not know that it's likely to cause death when they throw it off. So if they were charged with murder, they may not know it's likely to cause death. They may not have thought that far ahead. But they'd certainly be manslaughter in the sense that it's an unlawful act, and they know it's wrong. They satisfy that test if they're under 14, and someone's badly injured or killed. There's also a provision if you injure someone in such circumstances that it could, if you had a cause to death, you could be guilty of manslaughter. That's also a serious provision. So if they injured someone, didn't actually kill them, it's also a provision they could be charged and it would otherwise be manslaughter if they killed them.
Okay, so although the police, Mark, may be talking fairly soothingly about it, in fact, if they catch these young guys, they'll throw the book at them if they're over...
last time, didn't they? I mean, they charged the young fellow with murder.
Yeah.
And so, which, you know, under the Act, and the prosecution had to prove that he knew it was likely to cause death, and that's probably where it fell down. But it's not at too high a step. You just have to know it's likely to cause death, not certainly cause death. You don't have to intend to cause death. You just have to know it's likely to cause death.
This assumption that, you know, young people this age are capable of moral reasoning and decision-making, but presumably other capacities like risk assessment and understanding of consequences are still developing, which is what I guess you're talking about. Is this true, or thinking back to your own teenage years when you were 15, 16, whatever, I mean, do you think common sense would have actually assisted you to realise that throwing a big rock through a car is going to do terrible damage?
Well, there is research, and I know the psychology people do a lot of research to show that the so-called frontal lobe, that people do take more risk in teenage years, and I think there's a lot of evidence to show that's where a lot of accidents happen. People drive faster, they they make calculated risks, they do things. So I think there is some truth in the fact that people are kind of more risk-taking at that age and probably less averse to risk. And as we get older, we get more cautious about these sorts of things. So I think there's some truth in that. Whether they understand the consequences is a little bit different. I don't give thought to them, as both Steve and Vicky were saying. But I think they certainly are more risk-taking. That's part of being a youth. I mean, you must have driven around the streets a bit faster than you need.
Oh, yeah, no, indeed. But there's a difference between putting yourself and maybe even your mates at risk in a car and doing this, I would have thought.
I'm not sure, because, I mean, if you're driving a car fast down the main street and doing silly things like, you know, boys will stick their head out the window and do silly things or not look where they're going, that does put other people at risk because you could harm someone else, and they're not intending to do that.
No.
They may not quite see that particular consequence. Or if you go through a red light because you think it's fun when you're younger, a lot of people do run the red lights when they're younger, that's going to put risk at someone else. They don't see the risk to anyone else at that stage, possibly, but again, it doesn't. You don't have to see the risk to be guilty in law.
No, but these
I think it's
idiots.
Also...
So go ahead, Vicky. The,
there's also, I think, a certain degree of the anonymity that's available in something like this, where you can make something amusing to their minds happen and get away with it because you can run before anybody else turns up to make sure that you take responsibility for it. Mm. And while you've got, you know, you don't have any interaction between the person that you're doing, it's not like standing up and punching somebody in the face.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, flicking something behind someone's head and they don't see it coming and hit them in the back of the head, and then everyone pretends who did this. And this is a lot more serious than that, of course, but there is that element amongst boys who they like doing those sorts of things.
Yeah, indeed.
No, and it is, as you're both hinting at, it's a profoundly cowardly act, because you stand on a bridge, you drop something off. First of all, it is utterly anonymous. You've got no idea who you're throwing it at. This isn't even a person. It's just a box on wheels. Mm. So that you're divorcing yourself from humanity there. You also know that in all likelihood, there's no comeback whatsoever. There's no personal risk involved. You're not actually taking a risk. Whichever poor sod's driving past and gets their windscreen shattered isn't going to know it's you, isn't going to come and sort you out. You can just walk away and you know, seconds after you've done it, you're just walking down the street same as anybody else. It's quite a cowardly act.
Mm. Yeah, well, it comes back to what extent they appreciate that.
I mean, the young chap killed in Queenstown, wasn't it? A young Auckland chap was killed, and I don't know what went through his window screen, but he was killed when he was driving along just recently. Something went through his window screen. They're trying to work out whether someone threw something or what happened there. So
I know that's
a highly dangerous act. I think the more we talk about it, the more young people know about it, the better.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Mark. Professor Mark Hannon,
yes.
University of Otago's Dean of Law, and Walter suggesting on the text that police will probably start using cameras in these vital areas because the problem would then be solved. We're going to be a thoroughly cameraed society soon, aren't we? Perhaps we could put cameras around our coast instead of having men with guns on the shoreline. Oamaru residents are apparently being targeted in a recruitment campaign for what turns out to be a Christchurch-based white supremacist group, and the group wants to recruit armed men to patrol the whole of New Zealand's coastline to ward off people smugglers from Indonesia. And I think about 10,000 pamphlets, was it, were placed in letterboxes this week stating the intention to form armed coastal patrols to protect the coast from people smugglers and illegal foreign fishing.
Oh, those damn foreigners coming to New Zealand, because, yeah, that is terrible. The irony,
shouldn't be loud.
The irony of white people in New Zealand complaining about immigration is just priceless, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't really pay attention or give any kind of airtime to the RWR, the right wing resistance group. I mean, they've got no credibility. They've got a couple of members, basically. One of the things that my 21-year-old did as a mid-teens was get involved in organising anti-skinhead marches. So we'd have no time for this kind of organisation.
I suppose so, but I think part of the publicity in places like the Otago Daily Times has been to inform residents what on earth they are reading as they peruse the leaflet that they received in their letterbox asking them if they want to sign up.
Yeah, use it to light the fire.
And stroll along the coastline with a gun. All right.
I did like the idea that one of the commentators made on it, which was said, well, if they're going to stand on the beaches, perhaps they could take a rubbish bag and tidy up while they're at it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Teach philosophy in schools to help with decision-making and make it compulsory, says Hayley.
Because presumably these kids were at school all day before they then went to the bridge and started lobbing things off it. These obviously were kids who were actually paying attention in philosophy class otherwise.
They just needed a good firm teacher like you.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Steve McCabe, thank you for being on, and good luck with your bees.
Thank you.
Bring us in some honey if you...
You're on.
Would you? Thank you. Vicky Hyde, thank you very much for your company today as well.
Cheers.
Checkpoint follows. Thank you, everybody. We are back tomorrow.